This is Greg Keeler with Blue Rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT, Pittsburgh.
I was toting my pack along the dusty when a mucker rode it. When along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to win a mucker mat, with me you can ride. So I climbed into
Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
There are only so many major political events globally each year, and we have one that is transpiring right now. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the Conservative Party, colloquially known as the Tories, has announced that he's going to resign. His party has lost confidence in him. It has been humiliation after humiliation, and up until the last moment, Boris Johnson was saying, resign? Why? No, why would I resign? And he is now resigned, or he will resign once a replacement is found. A very good report about this from the Associated Press. Britain's Boris Johnson resigning as prime minister amid scandal. This is another Trumpist type whose political run is, at least for now, ending in completely humiliating defeat. Of course, you know, pending what happens with Trump in 2024, there may be more written in the Trump story, but this is another Trumpian type who is getting humiliated out of office. Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced his resignation Thursday amid a mass revolt by top members of his government, marking an end to three tumultuous years in power in which he brazenly bent and sometimes broke the rules of British politics. Months of defiance ended almost with a shrug as Johnson stood in 10 Downing Street and conceded that his party wanted him gone. Let's look at a bit of that announcement. And yeah, the AP very accurately saying it was months of defiance and this sort of faux principled indignant defiance. Resign. I am here to do a job for the people of the. Yeah, I guess I'm gone. Meh, I don't know.
Good afternoon. Thank you. It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister. Right. And I've agreed with Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of our backbench MPs, that the process of choosing that new leader should begin now. And the timetable will be announced next week. And I've today appointed a cabinet to serve, as I will, until a new leader is in place. So I want to say to the millions of people who voted for us in 2019, many of them voting Conservative for the first time, thank you for that incredible mandate.
Yeah, the message should be to those who voted for the Tories for the first time, you're probably never going to do it again.
The biggest Conservative majority since 1987, the biggest share of the vote since 1979.
Yeah. So there it is, Boris Johnson resigning in shame. A little bit more from the Associated Press article. The brash 58-year-old who took Britain out of the EU and steered it through COVID and the war in Ukraine was brought down by one scandal too many. This one involving his appointment of a politician who had been accused of sexual misconduct. Now, I have to tell you, in reading through this, Johnson is a sort of British version of Trump in many ways, not just the hair. The kind of brash, never apologize type nature and, you know, the sort of pseudo right wing stuff. Yeah. But I have to tell you, at this point, American politics has fallen so far, like, into the toilet, for lack of a better term.
People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
American politics are so in the toilet that if Trump had done the exact same things Johnson did, I don't know that it would have been even a fraction of the big deal that it became in the UK. The messiest of prime ministers did not leave cleanly, the article says. Johnson stepped down immediately as Conservative Party leader, but said he would remain as prime minister until the party chooses his successor, the timetable could be announced next week. From what I'm reading, we could be talking about months during which it's a sort of lame duck by self-designation situation there. He could be there for months still. Many in the party wanted him gone before then. His government has been shredded by scores of resignations. And there's a long, long list of those. Johnson clung to power for 2 days, defiantly telling lawmakers Wednesday he had a colossal mandate from voters. Massive dumps of votes he had, guys, and intended to get on with the business of government. But he was forced to concede defeat Thursday after one of his closest allies, newly appointed Treasury Chief Nadeem Zahawi, publicly told him to resign for the good of the country. Look at these numbers. About 50 cabinet secretaries, ministers, and lower level officials had quit the government over the past few days, often castigating the prime minister for his lack of integrity. So a very interesting and big story. The most relevant question, arguably, globally about this resignation is, okay, so you replace Johnson with someone less cartoonish, but does the UK's positioning in geopolitics change on any major issue? Do trade relationships change in any major way as a result of this? No, probably not. Does the British position on the Ukrainian defense against the Russian invasion change? No, probably not. And so it is a very, it's a personally scandal-ridden individual who's now going to be replaced, but there's really no reason to think that in any substantive capacity, the UK's geopolitical positioning is going to change. And you could say, well, that's a good thing or that's a bad thing or stability is good, but actually change would be good because the UK has become much more right wing than many of us on the left would like to see. We'll have to see where the dominoes sort of fall as far as that goes. But this is primarily a personal scandal within the context of the Conservative Party, who will now choose a new leader, and subsequently there will be a new prime minister. Now, there could be follow-on effects at the time of the next election, and depending on what happens within the United States in terms of the midterms in 2024, you could certainly see a shifting dynamic in the relationship between the UK and the US and in the UK's positioning globally. None of that is happening right now. This is Johnson is out. He will be replaced. Other than, again, the sort of like cartoonish nature of Johnson, I don't anticipate, based on everything I'm reading right now, that there will be any radical or substantive changes, certainly to our relationship with the UK, but not a good couple of days for Boris Johnson. And very much like Trump, defiant until the final moment. With Trump, it was, well, making every claim about how he was going to stay in power because he really won, and then just quietly leaving, not even going to the inauguration. With Boris Johnson for weeks and weeks remaining indignant about, well, what do you mean resign? 2 days, even when it was clear the pressure was overwhelming, saying, why would I resign? And then I'm out and we'll see what the next step is. Folks, we have to now pray at the altar of Joe Biden. Joe Biden has now reduced gas prices 22 days in a row. How did he do it? Obviously, because Joe Biden was to blame for higher gas prices in every country. We must now praise Joe Biden for this notable extended decline to gas prices. I'm not actually being serious, but let me tell you what it is that is going on, and then we will talk about it. Gas prices continue to drop. Gas prices fell another 2 cents yesterday to $4.77 per gallon, according to the latest AAA data. Down 24 cents from the highest ever recorded level of $5.015 last month. Gas prices are on track to continue falling, though maybe not fast enough for President Joe Biden, who has criticized gas stations for keeping prices high. So I tweeted sort of tongue in cheek yesterday, gas prices have declined 21 days in a row. How did Joe Biden do this? It was completely satirical. And with 50,000 likes on that tweet as of this morning and maybe more at this point in time, most people understood it, but not everybody. And some people thought I was being serious and actually responded to me saying, David, Joe Biden's irresponsible actions are responsible for gas prices having gone up, but he didn't do anything to lower them. Oh, okay. So when a Democrat sees higher gas prices, it's their fault. But when a Democrat sees declining gas prices, it has nothing to do with that Democrat. I've got it. Now, of course, you would probably be asking one of the same questions I've been asking. How is Joe Biden responsible for gas prices being up in most countries over the last year? And how can we now say he has nothing to do if that is his major responsibility, which is incredible? One man responsible for higher gas prices globally. Now they go down and we say it has nothing to do with him. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. When gas prices go down under a Democrat, conservatives say nothing. It's only when they go up. And remember, when prices were up under Donald Trump, conservatives said nothing. They didn't complain. I wonder why that is. So we can look at some of the data here. Gas Buddy is a good website tracking this. As you can see, there was this peak just under 502 per gallon right around, what was that, mid-June, I guess we would call it. And now gas prices down, not a crazy amount, down about 5%. Now, there's a couple of different things that are going on. One of them is that the price of crude oil has started to decline relatively significantly. You might remember that briefly in March, crude oil prices hit, what was this, $123 per barrel. Crude oil is the source material for what is eventually refined into gasoline that we, not me, I'm on electric now, but that people put in their cars. And speaking of electric vehicles, there's a reason I bring that up. Sustained high gas prices aren't particularly good for the oil industry. You might think, well, the higher the gas prices are, the more money they make. In the short and medium term, maybe. But if the longer the gas prices are sustained at a high level, the more people will say when it comes time to replace their vehicle, I'm going to get off gas altogether and go to an electric vehicle. That's not good for the gasoline industry. So we had that spike to about $123 per barrel in March. And then we had another spike almost to the same level, $122 per barrel about a month ago. And now, as of yesterday, oil prices were all the way down to, what does this look like, about $98, $99 per barrel. That's a pretty significant decline. In a perfect world, you would eventually see that same proportional decline, about 17, 18%, trickle down to gasoline. It almost never happens. I'm reminded of we've seen those of us who have paid attention to or purchased airline tickets over the last 15, 20 years. Remember that every time that jet fuel prices and crude oil prices go up, airplane tickets go up, and sometimes there's fuel surcharges and all these different things. But then when the prices of jet fuel come down and crude oil come down, those are rarely, if ever, removed. They're sort of like permanent. And we often don't see gas prices. Gas prices will mirror the increases in oil prices, but they will not mirror the decreases. But needless to say, I don't think Joe Biden really has anything to do with this. I didn't think Joe Biden had anything to do with gas prices going up. And I think he has essentially nothing to do with gas prices going down. He released a little bit of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Very modest impact. And that's really the tool, other than, you know, going to war with an oil rich nation or a gas tax holiday. Releasing supply from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is one of the very few tools presidents have. This stuff is global. This stuff is cyclical. It tends to move relatively slowly. We're now, it's about 3.5 weeks, and it's like a 5% decrease that we've seen. So my expectation, and I don't really make predictions that I would ever suggest anyone make any financial decisions on. My expectation, just based on what we've been seeing, we've seen a slowdown in the growth to the inflation rate. I expect to see that continuing to come down. Gas prices are going to be a part of that. And my guess is, and it's not a guess I'm betting on. Remember, this is my guess. But in terms of financial stuff, I'm just doing the same thing I always do, just every month maintaining my asset allocation. I'm not making any shorts or investments in any commodities. I think over the next 6 months, we will see inflation taper off. We will see gas prices continue to come down, particularly as we are now at a time that gas prices are often really expensive, the summer driving season, as it's often called. And I think 6 months from now, things are going to look a lot more reasonable. What we're now getting to, and we talked about this yesterday with Pat on the bonus show, is that first there were recession fears because of such high prices and inflation. Now, as we're seeing that start to taper a little bit, there are recession fears over a demand collapse. So either way, you'll find people who have recession fears. I have no idea if we're heading into a recession, but at least the gas price numbers are starting to come down. And I'm ready for all the right wingers who blamed Biden for gas prices being up to praise him for them being down. I'm ready. I'm not expecting it. I'm not holding my breath, but I'm ready if they want to be at least consistent. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know what you're seeing locally. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. So now they're blaming antidepressants and marijuana, cannabis, for the mass shootings that the United States is plagued with. That's where the American right wing now is. So let me show you something interesting before we dive into these latest claims. Here are previous stories that I've done over the years covering the different things that the right is blamed for mass shootings. And notice what's missing from this list. So this is over the last many years on the show. Fox News blamed masks, like COVID masks, abortion, and woke for mass shootings in the United States. They've previously blamed Joe Biden for mass shootings. They've blamed rap music, video games, and COVID lockdowns for mass shootings. Right winger Brian Fisher and Fox News blamed the fact that some churches ban guns for mass shootings in churches. Not long ago, and famously, cartoonishly, Ted Cruz, Republican senator from Texas, blamed doors for mass shootings. Here's one from the archives way back in 2011. A wacky Arizona sheriff blamed rhetoric for a mass shooting. OK, notice that guns are completely missing. The guns are what the shootings are done with a gun. But they never talk about guns. They talk about everything other than guns. And now it's marijuana and it's antidepressants. Laura Ingraham on Fox News talking about this. We talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago, and she's still at it. She did this again this week based on the latest shooting in Highland Park, Illinois.
But instead of selling fear and division, wouldn't it be nice if we all began to focus on solutions? Don't people want solutions? I sense right. They do. Now, on the mass shooting in Illinois, indications are that Robert Cremo was a regular pot user. Now, one look at him, and to the untrained eye, he looks like a complete psychotic. Have you ever seen anyone looking like him?
Now, his appearance, we don't yet know, but there are many medical professionals actually speculating that his physical appearance is indicative of a syndrome. Let's just leave it there. So the point is, if you want to look at the physical appearance, there's definitely lots of questions raised by the physical appearance, but the marijuana piece seems sort of like neither here nor there.
And what can regular pot use trigger in young men in particular? Psychosis and other violent personality changes. Not everyone, but a significant percentage.
Okay, so it is not a significant percentage, and we actually have good studies on this. We have actual peer-reviewed research. It is true that some studies have found a slightly higher likelihood of violent behavior among cannabis users, but haven't been able to establish any causality at this point. It hasn't been established that cannabis makes people who were not already predisposed to violence to be any more violent. And lastly, there's no evidence I was able to find that cannabis use makes people more likely to commit crimes, even if some criminals are high on cannabis at the time that they commit a crime. There's been no causal relationship that's been established. And maybe most notable, I mean, sometimes we just have to say, does this pass the sniff test? The prevalence of cannabis use is way higher in a ton of countries that have almost no mass shootings. Look at pot use in the South American country of Chile. Almost no shootings. Look at Canada, third in the world in terms of per capita cannabis use. Almost no shootings. Israel, super high cannabis usage, almost no shootings. You get the idea. So that's cannabis. Now, antidepressants. This is another one. This is a recycling of something that others have talked about. Alex Jones used to talk about SSRIs. SSRIs are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. These are often prescribed for anxiety and or depression. Some of these have been around at least 50, maybe even more like 70 years. Very safe and well-studied class of drugs. Marjorie Taylor Greene, radical Republican congresswoman from Georgia, is now on the SSRI bandwagon. She tweeted, quote, "When are we going to have an honest conversation about drug abuse, mental illness, and SSRIs? Deadly side effects. Are we really going to keep pretending or covering for big pharma? Because I'm absolutely done with the political plays on this BS. There is no evidence that SSRIs cause people to be violent. Now, this requires a little more thinking, and thinking is not a common, it's not a prevalent commodity, it's not an abundant commodity in general, and particularly among the American right. One of the considerations is people predisposed to violence might be getting prescribed the SSRIs. That's not evidence that the SSRIs cause the violence, but it's a potential reason for why violent people might be on SSRIs. That's one thing. The second part of it, and this is a really big issue, lots of young people prescribed SSRIs aren't actually taking them or taking them as prescribed. There's a study that, and you are you guys willing to think with me here? Because otherwise we're in trouble. There's a study that found a small association, not a causation. A study found an association between people 18 to 24 on SSRIs and violence. And that association doesn't exist for those 25 plus. So you look at people 25 plus on SSRIs, no association between SSRIs and violence. You look at 18 to 24, there's a small association between being on SSRIs and violence. Association, not causation. And the study recognizes the study is based on what people are prescribed, not based on what people are taking. The 18 to 24 group might be more likely to not actually take the medication that they're prescribed. And if they took the medication, it might reduce their propensity for violence. This is the exact same thing that happened with, now I don't remember if it was with ivermectin or with hydroxychloroquine. There was this Brazil, it was ivermectin. A Brazilian, quote, study supposedly, quote, found that people given prophylactic ivermectin were less likely to get COVID or to become seriously ill from COVID. And then the study was eventually debunked and shown to be a very poor study because it wasn't a controlled study of any kind. There was a community where ivermectin was just handed out, and there was no actual way to know, did anybody actually take the ivermectin? Did the people who didn't get sick, were they actually taking the ivermectin? If I were to just go into a neighborhood and hand out some medication, and I don't actually know if anybody took it, and even if they say they took it, did they actually take it the way it was prescribed? And then I make some kind of conclusion from that, it would be very bad science. And similarly, the one study that found this small association among 18 to 24 year olds between violence and SSRIs, we don't know whether actually they were taken. We just know that they were prescribed. So it's more junk science. And notice, they will throw anything they can at the wall, see what sticks, other than saying we've got to deal with guns. Earlier this week, I told you that Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman, two former Donald Trump lawyers, and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham have all been subpoenaed by a court in the state of Georgia. And it's become very common for Republicans to ignore subpoenas from Congress to appear before the January 6th committee. But ignoring a subpoena from a court is a very different thing. Well, we've now heard from Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. He says he's not going to cooperate with the Georgia Trump election probe. Now, importantly, some of you wrote to me and said, how can Lindsey get away with this? Isn't he going to be thrown in jail for contempt of court? Understand, Lindsey's not saying he's going to ignore it. He's saying he's going to fight it. He's going to try to fight the subpoena. Senator Lindsey Graham reports Reuters will not comply with a subpoena issued by a grand jury in Georgia investigating Trump's attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 elections. Quote, Senator Graham plans to go to court, challenge the subpoena, and expects to prevail, said, I guess, two of his attorneys. They say Graham was well within his rights to discuss with state officials the processes and procedures around administering elections. What they're referring to is that Graham called and, you know, it was very clear he was trying to strong arm Georgia into flipping the results. But what they're calling it is a discussion about procedures. Very benign way to refer to it. The grand jury also subpoenaed Rudy Giuliani and others. The grand jury was selected in May to look at evidence in a probe launched after Trump was recorded on a phone call pressuring state officials to overturn the results. Graham's attorney said in the statement that the senator was being called simply as a witness in what they call a fishing expedition. Any information from an interview or deposition with Senator Graham would immediately be shared with the January 6th committee. They don't like that. And he is going to try to fight the subpoena. Now, if he tries to fight the subpoena and loses and a court says you have to respond to the subpoena and he doesn't, he would then be in contempt of court. That is not where we are right now. If the court decides he must comply and he doesn't, it will become a legal issue for him. Unlikely, I have to tell you, that he will end up arrested because he's not, again, he's not a subject or a target of the investigation. He's merely a witness. He still could be held in contempt. He could face daily fines if he ignores it. It's not likely that he's going to be imprisoned. And if he still didn't pay the fines that are assigned to him for ignoring the subpoena, then his assets could be seized. But it is very unlikely that Lindsey's actually going to get himself arrested. That's where we are right now. Of course, it would be great if everybody just complied and they could tell us everything we need to know. And it would be very clear that everybody's innocent. Nobody did anything wrong. And then we could just all move on with our lives. But instead, they are obstructing and impeding and trying to get in the way of these investigations at every turn. I will remind you, my opinion remains that it is more likely that if there are going to be big time charges, even against Trump, which I don't think is particularly likely, but if it's going to happen, I believe it's far more likely to come from the Georgia investigation than from the January 6th investigation. And I've given the reasons why already. And that's where my mind remains. Obviously, if they don't get people to comply with subpoenas, it will be much more difficult to build these cases. We will have more on all of these stories on the David Pakman Show Instagram, which can be found at David Pakman Show. Dozens of you sent me this clip that we're going to look at. Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, who's a Republican. I probably didn't have to tell you that. You could probably figure it out from what she said. She's from Arizona. She said on the floor of the House of Representatives that she would do anything for her own grandchildren, including shooting them. What? What does that even mean? Now, did she just misspeak? Well, if she did, she hasn't clarified it. She's responded to criticism of this bizarre statement by saying people are attacking her and all these different. If she misspoke, she could just say she's misspoke. But let's take a look at what she said.
Arizona is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I rise in opposition to H.R. 2377.
Oh.
I have 5 grandchildren. I would do anything, anything to protect my 5 grandchildren, including, as a last resort, shooting them if I had to protect the lives of my grandchildren.
What? Have we really gone so woke that a God-fearing, flag-waving Republican can't shoot her own grandchildren to save them? What on earth does this mean? Like, if they're about to shoot themselves dead, she would shoot them in the hand so they drop the gun and don't kill themselves? Like, what does it even mean? What possible scenario would this even be an option? And the scenario I'm landing on is she seems very unstable and should probably have guns taken away. It sounds like she's very, very dangerous. Now, what was her response to this? Lesko responded by attacking so-called gun control zealots for suggesting she would shoot her own grandchildren. But that's exactly what she said. Instead of attacking the people saying, what the hell is she talking about? As zealots, she could just say, oh, I misspoke. That's it. I did say I would shoot my grandchildren, but that's not what I meant. Oh, all right. Well, that's simple. Newsweek reports that Debbie Lesko suggested her critics are misrepresenting her comments. Well, I just played it for you. We could listen to it one more time. It was very clear.
It's recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I rise in opposition to H.R. 2377.
Okay.
I have 5 grandchildren.
I have 5 grandchildren.
I would do anything, anything to protect my five grandchildren.
She would do anything to protect her grandchildren.
Including, as a last resort, shooting them.
Including, as a last resort, shooting them. Now, is there some other noun in the sentence that she might be referring to when she says them? No, the only noun she has talked about is her grandchildren. So why can't she just say, I misspoke? I said, in my zealous defense of my own grandchildren, I misspoke. What I meant was, I would even go so far as to shoot an intruder in order to save my grandchildren. Why can't she just say that? This is the Trumpian influence. She says something bonkers. It might be as simple as she misspoke. And her response is to attack so-called gun control zealots for going after her. I guess this is part of the whole Trumpian thing where you can't apologize anymore, or you can't just say, I just said the wrong thing. I misspoke. You can't do it anymore. So she just has to attack people. Bizarre stuff. I hope somebody has checked, but just to be safe, I hope someone has checked on her five grandchildren. There are some Republicans already endorsing Donald Trump for 2024. Donald Trump hasn't even announced he's running in 2024. And one of the things Pat and I spoke about yesterday on the award-winning bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Is that this 2024 presidential election may be the most interesting and unique presidential election I will have ever covered, and probably that I'll ever have been alive for. Think about what we could be heading towards that I have been alive for so far. I don't want to know, in the future, anything could happen. We could have the incumbent president, Joe Biden, not run for re-election. The sitting vice president, Kamala Harris, trying for the nomination and losing it potentially. She's very unpopular right now. That's just a fact. It's not my opinion. Kamala Harris is a perfectly fine person. She's just not very popular right now. So you could have Biden say, I'm not running for re-election. Harris saying, I am running. And Democratic voters might choose someone else. So the sitting VP might lose the Democratic nomination. On the Republican side, you could have a former president, one-term president, Donald Trump, who lost, was removed from office, trying to become the nominee. That alone would be unique, and he may also lose. It's not obvious that Donald Trump would win. He probably would win based on current polling, but Ron DeSantis is surging. Every 2 weeks, every week or two, Ron DeSantis is doing better and better in 2024 betting markets. That, I can't think of another time when that's happened. Sitting president doesn't run. VP tries for the nomination up against a one-term president also trying for the nomination. So Trump not even running. Some Republicans already endorsing him. Here's Jim Jordan, a horrible person by any stretch of the imagination, saying what we need is Trump back in the White House.
Simple video. So, this will not change until Donald Trump's back in the White House and we get a commander in chief who knows how to lead. But you're absolutely right. Hundreds of pilots.
Okay. So Jim Jordan says we need Trump back in the White House. Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, or Boebert, she has put up a Trump 2024 flag at Shooter's Grill, which I guess is her restaurant in Colorado or something. So she's already on Trump 2024. Marco Rubio has said if Trump runs, then yeah, I would support him. Here's an interview from a few months ago for Marco Rubio, a Florida Republican senator.
The senator added that he's confident the state's 2022 election cycle is secure. Looking ahead to 2024, I asked Senator Rubio if he would support Donald Trump for another term as president.
Yeah, look, if Donald Trump is going to run for president in 2024, he'll be the Republican nominee. And of course, I would support him in that. I mean, we're far long ways off from that. A lot's going to happen between now and then.
True. So there's Marco Rubio, who says he would support Trump if Trump were the nominee. And then, I mean, this is just, it's almost a little weird. Even Mitch McConnell, the Senate now minority leader, former majority leader, Republican, who has said so many negative things about Trump, has clashed with Trump when it comes to the January 6th riots. Trump has been attacking McConnell for so long. Even Mitch McConnell says, yeah, I mean, if he's the nominee, I would support him.
With that, Well, there's a lot to happen between now and 24. I've got at least four members that I think are planning on running for president, plus some governors and others. There's no incumbent. Should be a wide open race and fun for you all to cover.
If the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
Yeah. So for all the negative things that Mitch McConnell has said about Trump and how horrifying Trump's actions were around January 6th, all of it. If he's the nominee, of course I'll support him. I guess it sounds like there's really no one that Mitch McConnell wouldn't support over a Democrat if they were the party's nominee. And then Republican Senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott, says, of course, this is from a few months ago, of course he would support Donald Trump if Donald Trump runs again in 2024. Now, on the other side of this, the other interesting component to this is that there's a growing list of Republicans who are not going to be supporting Donald Trump in 2024. And there's kind of three buckets of Republicans, and this may change as things go forward. There's the people already supporting Trump 2024, even though he's not a candidate. There's those who are just waiting, probably to kind of put their finger to the wind and see, does it look like the party wants Trump again, or is it looking like it's going to be DeSantis, or what, you know, they're kind of fair weather Trump supporters. And then you've got the people who have said, I am not supporting Donald Trump ever again. Of course, this includes Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, the two Republicans who are on the January 6th committee. But a former Trump ally, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, has said he's not going to be supporting Trump, or at least he may run against Trump. He may run for the 2024 Republican nomination. Mitt Romney, who has said, I believe if Trump runs, he will win the nomination, but he would have to do it without Mitt Romney's support. And there are others as well. So shaping up, and I know that this is very unlike me, you know, in 2012, when people were saying, well, no, in 2013, when people were asking me questions about the 2016 presidential, I said, we've got to get past the 2014 midterm first. In 2017, when there was so much discussion about 2020, I said, we've got to deal with the 2018 midterm first. This is an unusual situation. So much of the midterms relates directly to 2024, particularly when Republicans are trying to use the 2022 midterms to take control of more state election systems so that then they can give 24 to their nominee no matter who wins in the actual voting, and on and on and on. So this is a unique situation in that the 22 and 24 elections are inextricably linked. And as I mentioned at the top of the segment, 24 is looking like it could be one of the wildest and most unusual situations I've ever covered or even lived through. I mean, you think about 1992. OK, yeah, Bill Clinton defeated one term George H.W. Bush. Not the most common scenario, but nothing compared to sitting president doesn't run, VP tries, maybe loses, former one term president tries to run, maybe wins, maybe loses. That's wild. And I expect it to be absolutely insane. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to examine a radical Republican's track record of gaffes and try to ascertain, is she really this dumb? I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. Is she really this dumb? Remember that Saturday night, Donald Trump will be in Alaska trying to damage Lisa Murkowski, Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski's reelection campaign. He doesn't like her. He calls her a rhino. We will be live with that on YouTube, Twitch and Facebook. I hope you'll join me. But let's take a quick break. Plenty more still to come today. All right. Many of you have asked me, David, do you think Marjorie Taylor Greene, the radical Trumpist Republican congresswoman, is she really this dumb and ignorant when she says things like her rights were flagrantly violated, or that there was a peach tree dish, or that Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police did something? Is she really this dumb, or are these incredibly brilliantly orchestrated viral moments that are contrived and planned to get her attention? Or are they sort of like verbal glitches in the style of Trump? So let's see if we can figure it out one by one. First of all, there's a new one of these. Marjorie Taylor Greene recently said that people were stroking fear. Of course, the term is stoking fear.
Stroking fear and paranoia in everyone, saying terrible messages ahead of time.
Right. They were stroking fear. So first and foremost, these are not the types of glitches that Trump has. When Trump has these glitches, he either is having a problem reading or he's having the brain glitch.
No more Dropbox. The Dropbox is a...
Exactly.
Mexico and...
Sure.
A rhino named Mitt Romney.
Truth Central.
Anyway, Donald Trump. Yeah, Donald Trump.
Like, Trump knows his own name. That's just a verbal glitch.
Obama.
Yeah, he knows it's Barack Obama. So I would put the Marjorie Taylor Greene gaffes squarely outside of the kind of like brain glitch Trump thing. So then the question becomes, are these calculated or are these just natural utterances? So again, here's the latest one from yesterday, stroking fear.
Stroking fear and paranoia in everyone, saying terrible messages ahead of time.
Now, that one could be that she misread it. I think maybe she doesn't know the word stoking. She seems to be reading on this one. We've then got when her rights were flagrantly violated. If you have never smelled Marjorie Taylor Greene be flagrantly violated, then you don't know what's going on out there.
And why their due process rights are being so flagrantly and horrifically violated.
So that one's not reading. She's not reading that. Is that deliberate? Is it some kind of brilliant joke which gets 5 million views and more? It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like it. Here's another example. This is her infamous gazpacho police, of course, hoping to refer to the Gestapo.
Not only do we have the D.C. jail, which is the D.C. gulag, but now we have Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police spying on members of Congress, spying on the legislative work that we do.
It doesn't seem contrived. It seems like she really has no idea what she's talking about. Here's the last one where she referred to a petri dish as a peach tree dish. Like, what could that even mean? What does she think a peach tree dish is?
You have to accept the fact that the government totally wants to provide surveillance on every part of your life. They want to know when you're eating. They want to know if you're eating a cheeseburger, which is very bad because Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
A peach tree dish. So you'll probably get. I don't think that that's fake. I just don't think that that's fake. I think she's really that dumb and it's nothing to make fun of. I mean, education is a, so her being dumb is a tragedy. Her being ignorant is a tragedy of the American education system. People voting for her anyway, despite being so clueless. Is that also because of the same education system, or should we be saying the real crazies are the people voting for her? Like, in most countries, if someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene ran for office or something, she would just be laughed off of the ballot. So maybe really the concern, as we've been saying with Trump, is the people willing to vote for her. Let me know what you think. I mean, as I've said before, it's not particularly unusual that people like Donald Trump exist or that they might be narcissists and might want power. That exists everywhere. The difference is the United States had 60 something million people. I don't remember the numbers who in 2016 were willing to vote for him to put him in power. That seems to be the unique part of the United States because, you know, Trump could just be some CEO in a German boardroom or something like that. I'm like, OK, these people exist everywhere, but they wouldn't make him the prime minister, the chancellor of Germany. I don't know. So to me, it seems that this is really more a reflection of the voters. Dumb people exist. Ignorant people exist. Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of them. It's in part a result of the failing education system of the United States. But I don't think these are contrived gaffes. I don't think these are calculated viral moments. I think she's just this dumb. Let me know if you disagree. Hey, this is sort of like an exercise in humiliating futility. Remember the truckers? These right wing truckers who were going to protest mandates and demand liberty and all these things. One of the leaders of the right wing truckers has been arrested, and he was arrested because he came to the attention of police while protesting non-existent COVID mandates. You might be saying, wait a second, David, the truckers aren't still going, are they? Because there's no mandates. There's some industries have requirements, but like what are we even talking about when we say COVID mandates? Things are essentially back to normal. It would be really dumb to get yourself arrested during a protest for something that's not even worthy of protest anymore. That's exactly what this guy did. Our friend Zachary Petrizzo from Daily Beast wrote this article, "Right-wing truckers leader gets arrested while protesting non-existent COVID mandates in D.C. Here is a picture of David Santa Riddell. If you're looking at the picture, you might understand why his nickname is Santa. The leader of the right-wing and COVID anti-vax 1776 restoration movement, formerly called the People's Convoy, was arrested near the National Mall on Wednesday after his group came to town protesting non-existent mandates. Far-right Proud Boy member and leader David Santa Riddell was taken into custody for a warrant out of Maryland, per D.C. Metro police officers. He was placed under arrest for the arrest warrant that he had issued for him. If there is a warrant out for your arrest, maybe it's not a good idea to get even more people paying attention to you. And I guess Riddell asked police to brief cameras about what is happening, and they explained what's going on. This is like adding insult to injury. You're protesting something that doesn't even exist, and it turns out he was wanted, and now you get yourself arrested.
What did he do? You guys are a disgrace to America. That's what you are, is a disgrace to America. That's what you are. And that's what you are.
Folks, can I speak for a second?
Sure.
I spoke with David over here. He said it's okay for me to share his information with you. Obviously, there's privacy concerns, but he's okay with that. He's being placed under arrest. He asked me to let you know because he has a warrant for his arrest out of the state of Maryland for obstructing the roadway.
The
Metropolitan Police Department was made aware of this arrest warrant. Therefore, we have to take action and execute the warrant. So that's why.
By the way, this officer sounds almost apologetic. I don't know if you are getting the same vibes as me, but it's sort of strange.
You're not even in Maryland. You're not even part of the state.
Oh, that is brilliant. You're not even in Maryland, and Washington, D.C. isn't even part of the states. So arrest warrants are interstate, and then extradition from one state to another is sort of like the next step in a separate thing. But there's really nothing super controversial outside of these fringe movements about the fact that warrants are valid across state lines.
You guys are a bunch of constitutional breaking cowards.
There's nothing unconstitutional about acting on a warrant from a different state. Completely uncontroversial.
We're here till he's gone.
D.C., it's the warrant.
Okay, so just so you understand how this works, since the warrant's inside the state of Maryland,
you
will have to be extradited.
You don't get a ticket.
Okay, I can't.
That's not too far. That's 5 minutes down the road, sorry.
Just understand you are a coward.
It seems like the officer being called a coward for following the law is explaining that, yes, the warrant is from Maryland, but he would now be extradited. And remember, this guy is only here because he's the arrestee, because he was protesting COVID mandates, which don't exist.
You are a coward.
First Amendment is protected speech.
Would like for whatever violations occurred in the state of Maryland on apparently July 4th or 5th, a warrant was issued by a judge in Maryland for this individual's arrest. Therefore, we were notified this warrant is extraditable. He is here. We are aware of it. Yeah, so that means we place him under arrest. He'll go in front of a judge here.
Imagine having to explain such simple things to these people. Such simple, uncontroversial things.
He'll be extradited back to the state of Maryland to face those charges, okay? So he will not be staying here in D.C. Eventually, he will go back to Maryland in front of a judge.
So
he will be processed here today in the city. He will go see a judge here. Depending on how the process works, if he wishes to waive or not waive extradition, then he will go to Maryland and see a judge in Maryland. Okay, that's how the process works.
Man, what a nightmare. I don't even know at this point what these groups are trying to achieve, because the mandates are gone. Yeah, they're defeat the mandates. What mandates are you talking about? Is it a grift for donations? And if so, who's even giving to these obvious scams? I truly don't get it. But really, a self-inflicted humiliation, arrested while protesting mandates that do not exist. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192 David P. Really important topic in today's voicemail. These nebulous 9-month abortions, okay? The right is in a frenzy over supposed 9-month abortions. Listen to the voicemail, then we'll discuss.
Hi, David. I just had a quick question. I keep hearing from Stephen Crowder and Lauren Boebert and other people that there's a 9-month, you can have a 9-month abortion in there in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if that is an anecdote or if it's just hyperbole or if it's rhetoric. Your thoughts on this would be much appreciated.
Okay. Something like 91% of abortions happen extremely early. I forget the exact number of weeks, but very, very early, 91%. And then the other 9%, almost all of those happen in an intermediate period of the pregnancy. Typically, now we're talking about for medical reasons. Now, what the right has seized upon is that there are some states that don't put a limit of gestational age legally on when an abortion could be done. So what the starting point for this claim that, oh, you can be 39 weeks pregnant, walk in and say, I'd like an abortion. And everybody's going to say, sure, sure. OK, what it stems from is that there are certain states that don't put a number of week limit on abortions, legally speaking. Now, obstetricians have weighed in on this endlessly, and they have all said recently under oath in congressional testimony, this does not happen. When you have an abortion at the extraordinarily late stage of an abortion of a pregnancy that is being discussed, it is essentially, aside from being so, so rare, it's because a genetic abnormality is found in the fetus that makes evident that this is not going to be able to be a person that survives either at all or for more than some minuscule amount of time outside of the womb. Horrible, horrible situations, genetic abnormalities and other things. And an extraordinarily difficult decision is made. At that point to accelerate by what might be days or a couple of weeks, what is inevitably going to be a non-viable pregnancy. Horrible situation, extremely rare. Other situation is it is determined that there is a situation that endangers the life of the mother. OK, these are insanely rare situations that do sometimes happen that are very difficult for the pregnant women and their families and are not what the right loves to dream up, which is a woman decides on week 39, 5 days before the 40-week mark or the due date, you know what? I just don't want the baby. Could we do an abortion? And OBs have already testified. It never happens. But if someone did come in and they are essentially full term and said, I don't want the baby, let's do an abortion. OBs have said we wouldn't do it. We would say, well, this is a full-term baby. Like we can do, if there's a problem with the pregnancy, we could do a C-section and then we could look at adoption if you're not, you know, this is an imaginary situation that the right has dreamed up that almost does not happen. So the origins of it are there are states that don't enshrine by statute a limit on the number of weeks for abortions. That doesn't mean women are walking in 2 days before their due date and saying, I'd like an abortion for no medically relevant reason. I just don't want the baby. Doesn't happen. OBs have explained it. It's a red herring. It's not even really relevant to the abortion debate, which, again, these right wingers who say, oh, people are walking in at 9 months, they're often also opposed to abortions at 5 weeks. So don't even be tricked into thinking that this is really even the issue for them. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Speaking of abortion, how are women now in certain states that have or will be banning abortion altogether? How are they going to obtain abortion pills that are or will be banned? There's already an entire infrastructure being put in place to try to support women in those situations and in those states. Second, Democrats are increasingly saying to Joe Biden, you do have some authority to take major steps towards cannabis legalization. You can't just say recreationally legal everywhere, but there are steps Joe Biden can take. What about doing that? We will talk about it. And number three, drag queens are now the new target of intimidation by the far right. As I tweeted this morning, there are lots of right wingers who seem to think drag queens and trans people are interchangeable terms. They are not. And it might not come as a shock to many of you that right wingers are confused about some things. And we will talk about that on the bonus show as well. Sign up at joinpacman.com. You can get instant access by signing up on our website. You can also get a discount off of the price of membership by using the coupon code BIGVOTING22. I look forward to welcoming you into the ranks of membership. I also will be streaming live Saturday night, the Trump rally in Alaska. This will be a doozy. I hope you'll join me on YouTube, Twitch, and or Facebook. And otherwise,
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCG Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
民主主義 の
We cannot accept that this violent act took place during an election, the foundation of democracy. In the strongest terms, I condemn this act.
Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been assassinated while giving a speech in Western Japan. We'll go to Tokyo to look at his death and legacy. Then the detained WNBA superstar Brittany Griner pleads guilty in a Russian court as pressure grows on the Biden administration to help secure her release.
I'm frustrated that 140 days have passed since my wife has been able to speak to me, to our family, and to her friends. I'm frustrated that my wife is not going to get justice.
Then we look at the killing of Al Jazeera reporter Shireen Abu Akleh in the occupied West Bank in May. This week, the U.S. State Department said she was likely killed by Israeli military gunfire, the conclusion of many news organizations, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN. But the U.S. found her death was the result of tragic circumstances, not an intentional killing. The U.S. is being accused of helping Israel whitewash her death before Biden's visit. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been shot and killed by an assassin wielding what appeared to be a homemade gun. Abe was campaigning for a parliamentary election Friday morning in the city of Nara in central Japan when two shots rang out. Images of the attack's aftermath shows security officials tackling a man in a gray T-shirt. They later named the 41-year-old suspect as Tetsuya Yamagami, a former member of Japan's Maritime Self-Defense Force. Footage from the scene shows what appears to be an improvised double-barreled gun. Japan's strict gun control laws prevent almost everyone from possessing guns. In 2021, there were 10 shooting incidents in Japan, just one gun death. By comparison, the U.S. typically records 45,000 gun deaths each year. Shinzo Abe was airlifted to a nearby hospital with injuries to his neck and heart. He was pronounced dead earlier today from blood loss. He was 67 years old. Abe was Japan's longest-running prime minister when he stepped down in 2020, citing poor health. Over nearly 8 years in office, Abe remained pro-nuclear despite the 2011 Fukushima nuclear meltdown following an earthquake and tsunami. Throughout his career, Abe tried unsuccessfully to do away with Article 9 of Japan's peace constitution, which renounces war and bars Japan from using or threatening to use military force. We'll have more on Shinzo Abe's assassination and his legacy after headlines when we go to Japan. Ukraine's government says at least 4 people have been killed and several others wounded by Russian rocket fire in Kharkiv and Kramatorsk. Elsewhere, Russian warplanes bombed Snake Island early Thursday, just after Ukrainian troops landed on the Black Sea territory and hoisted blue and yellow Ukrainian flags to celebrate Russia's withdrawal from the island. In Moscow, President Vladimir Putin said Russia's military operation in Ukraine is yet to start in earnest, more than 130 days after he ordered Russia's military to invade.
We are hearing that they want to defeat us on the battlefield. What can I say? Let them try. We have often heard that the West wants to fight us until the last Ukrainian. It's a tragedy for the Ukrainian people, but it looks like it's heading in that direction. But everybody should know that, largely speaking, we haven't even yet started anything in earnest.
In Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, President Volodymyr Zelensky met Thursday with visiting U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal. The pair are promoting bipartisan legislation that would see the U.S. declare Russia a state sponsor of terrorism. Join